What you are doing, really, you're exchanging this kind of energy of life, and life exists beyond human beings. I think we've over hyper focused on what it means to be a human being, but what does it mean to be beyond human? And we are creating an isolation from our natural rhythm. And I think that is the real crisis that we're in. It's not so much the crisis of what's beyond us, it's a crisis that is in within us.
Hello and welcome to The Empathizer, the podcast for more mutual understanding in our society. My name is Sebastian Krenzer and I listen to my guests to understand what moves them. Today I listen to Vakani. She talks about her heartfelt topic of human wisdom and how we can activate it. She explores the question of who we are as humanity and what wisdom we leave behind as humans. For her, wisdom is the acceptance that we do not know and do not control what happens next. She also discusses how this wisdom can help us to overcome current crises as human beings. And now, have fun listening. So, welcome today, Vakani, to the podcast Empathizer. And as usual, my first question is, what is your topic that is important to you, that moves you, and that you would like to be heard with?
Thank you so much, Sebastian. I'm so thrilled to be on your podcast, and thank you for inviting me. So a topic that is close to my heart, I would say, is the idea of who we are as compassionate beings and how we are as ancestors, or training to become ancestors for children that will then be citizens of the world that we design for them.
Wow. My first resonance when I heard this is it sounds like a deep topic. Yeah. You said wisdom and how to become a wisdom ancestors and also taking responsibility for the next generations as a wisdom ancestor.
Absolutely. So for me, I think that the word purpose we use so flippantly, and we haven't been able to establish what it means to have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you think about who we are as human beings, we are training ourselves to leave this planet. And so for me, that then begs the question, what is the wisdom I'll have left behind for those that will walk the same footpath or create a different footpath, but still be impacted by decisions that I made? So what is that wisdom?
So if we are trained to leave or live, you said?
Yes. Training to leave, like exit.
Okay.
We're training ourselves to exit this planet in some way or the other, whether, time is not on our side, right? So we're born with a whole amount of time, but it has an expiry date.
Yeah,
so my
yeah.
question is, as that time gets to the expiry date, what is the wisdom of my life's experience that I will have
I got
somewhat
it.
left behind here?
Got it. So what you are thinking about is because what I was a little bit irritated was usually we are thinking we have a life.
Yeah.
We're doing something in the life and we have to reach everything in the life we can imagine or we want, for example. But your approach is thinking about wisely. But what is before and after our lifetime? And what is the wisdom about this over this, right?
Yeah. What is this experience? You're born and then you end up dying, right?
Yeah.
But then the in between, there is a whole journey. There's a whole life. There is a whole wholeness to your life. Whether it is in a couple of years or 100 years, there is a wholeness to that. So it's almost like, how do you connect the dots to define that wholeness? What is that? What was your life worth?
Yeah.
Therefore, what's the wisdom behind your wholeness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like why I'm here on Earth. What's my purpose?
Something
right?
like that. Yeah. I think most philosophers would say they have been thinking about that, Aristotle's and whoever else, they've always stuck with that question, what is my purpose? But I think what is the wisdom behind my experience
And
here?
What was interesting for me by observing you when you were sharing your sentence was your gesture. You know, you created a circle with your hands and said connecting the dots. You know, I think sometimes people thinking it linear, like you know, like a line, but you created a circle with your gesture. So that seems to me, for you, it is, there's life, but it's not over. There is something before and behind, and what is the real purpose to being here, and what is the purpose of being alive, right?
And the exit process, what is the purpose of that as well, right?
Ah,
So
okay.
there has to be some, you know, some intelligence in your body, right, for you to be here. There's some intelligence that you're working with, consciously or unconsciously, that then leads you from your birth all the way to the end. So where is that, you know, what is that wisdom behind the experiences that you gather? Because obviously nothing is random, right? You're not, the job that you're doing is not random. You kind of designed that yourself. The partner you have, the children, the friends, even, you know, maybe even the family you have. So to me, I'm curious about the unconscious wisdom that arises that helps us make these unconscious decisions as well. To live a good life, or to leave a good footprint on the planet, or whatever it is that you decide your life's purpose is here.
And maybe it's not about good or bad. Maybe it's like, what's the purpose of having this kind of experience and having this kind of circumstances and surrounding, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's really, it's for me, it's like, it's a meaningful question, I guess I would say.
Well, it's you posed a very difficult question. I had to really think about it, you know, but I think ultimately I find, because we are storytelling beings, with what we're doing right now is storytelling, but there's a wisdom behind those stories. They're not just random. They're not made up. They're not fairy tales. They are products of thousands of years of human experience. So there is some kind of wisdom that we tap into. And I think if we can work with that, we might get closer to understanding our resonating values or resonating wisdom. And then the idea of purpose is kind of not even desirable. Then we just leave, you know, we actually live a life that is worth living.
So I have an easy functional question. How do you came to this topic?
Well, I was born and raised in Kenya, and one would say, you know, in Africa, it's the home of storytelling. So I think in a way, I've always told stories to make sense of life very consciously, right? Even just a basic greeting is a story in itself. You greet someone in Kenya or in my community, you're not just saying hello, you're literally finding out everything that's going on in that moment with that person. So there is a story to be told there. But I also grew up, I say this, I was raised by a forest, like an indigenous forest. So my house was adjacent to the Ngong Forest, which is like one of the last remaining indigenous forests to actually be found in a capital city. So it's on the outskirts of Nairobi. And this was a very exciting childhood looking back. Of course, then I didn't realize what a gift it was to grow up in a place where I could access nature in the most natural way. And my school, my little primary school, was inside this forest as well. So I would walk there. And that was really the foundation of my life as a human being. Yeah. So looking back to that, I think there is that interaction with nature, very natural one and very functional as well. I had to walk through the forest. I had to be careful which path I take and avoid this or take that. Now looking back, I think created this sense of interconnectedness in a very natural way. And my assumption was that everybody else feels the same way. Of course, then, you know, you then grow up and you realize, oh, maybe that was a very unique experience. Maybe not everyone has this experience. So I often hear, whenever I'm talking with someone, they'll say, oh, that's very wise, or that's such wisdom. And I think, to me, it's like common sense.
Yeah.
And then after a while, I started to realize that there was maybe our different experiences design obviously they design different lives and different purposes,
yeah.
But then they also either promote one worldview or
yeah.
none, right? So
yeah.
I started to look at that and wonder, you know, what is my worldview? And it's quite clear that it's very much inspired by this indigenous concept of reciprocity and interconnectedness. And there is a wisdom to that. And so when I look at it, I see that I definitely live my life based on this kind of non-transactional reciprocal relationships. That's very important to me. And this kind of wilded mentality that I'm a product of nature. I'm not an isolated being.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what you made in your childhood was this experience of being connected with the nature by walking through the forest. And also what I've heard is taking responsibility to be careful about where I put my foot on and what's around me. And so you're there, you develop the sense of, or actually the ability to go in some kind of interconnection with the forest to understand your circumstances and how to read the forest and feel the forest.
Absolutely. And also at the same time, ironically, I had this forest on the one hand and then my little home in the middle, and I could see this, the capital city, Nairobi, kind of rising, you know, the developing world was coming up.
Yeah.
And yet you have this very indigenous, timeless world. Yeah. So in a way, I've always occupied that bridge in between cultures or in between spaces. I've lived in many different countries around the world, three, four continents, in fact. And I still feel that resonance between, it's not one or the other, it's this and that. So we can occupy any part of the world and spaces.
Yeah.
But what my curiosity is, the where is the wisdom behind our thought processes? Yeah.
So you have different experience in different contexts.
Yes.
And then you can sense the differences. And then there was a question. I mean, your experience, everything is somehow connected. And then your curiosity is about how is it connected? Why is this way connected? And for what reason?
Well, actually, I would even reframe it and say, I think it's logical. We all know that obviously we're connected, but maybe not always conscious of how entangled our lives are. And I mean that by like a web, you know, if you take like, I think in Buddhist tradition, they would call it that in Indra's web. So it's so interconnected that there is no, you couldn't pull one thread out of all.
Yeah,
or a basket. I would even rather use the metaphor of the basket, you know, where I'm from, there's this basket weaving tradition. So it begins with a little strand and then you keep building on it.
So you
can't pull one strand. And at the end, it's actually frayed. I think that would be the word. So you have to tie it in order to make a whole basket. But if you left it, it would just kind of come apart. And I feel like that's life in a nutshell. So you're born, you're that little thread at the bottom there.
Yeah.
And then you weave these connections.
Yeah, yeah.
You become interconnected with different, you know, and you grow. So that's kind of your heart expanding, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then there is that dissolving into nothingness in the end, right?
This... I have two resonance in my mind. The one was, you know, you explained the situation of living between the forest and the capital and having this experience walking through the forest to your primary school and then seeing the growing capital. And in the forest, you have experienced this kind of interconnectedness and being connected. And for me, usually, big capitals or cities represented somehow the kind of disconnectedness, you know, because I experience this, the loss of the connection to the nature, because actually everything is artificial there, human-made, constructed. And then people living isolated in their homes, you know, in the city where I live, in Düsseldorf, there are over 50% of single households. You know what that means, right?
Wow.
And then people feel alone because they are not able to connect.
That's right. Yeah.
So this is what I am associating with a big city. And yeah. And then I've heard from you that you explained it with the basket, that every one of us has his own purpose, his own place in the basket. And then, for example, if I am the basket, I started with the first string and then I put on the, and the basket is being wrapped, you know?
Yes.
And so what I'm hearing for you, that therefore comes your question about what is my purpose of being here right now. And I can reflect what was in the past, where I came from, and the curiosity, what's coming next, what's, and then you ask the general question about what's my role and responsibility on this, on Earth.
That's right. And also, even just to take you one step back beyond purpose, because I think purpose is so overused and it can almost be obscure and
it's
abstract.
Wisdom, right?
Yeah. It's this idea of, so if you take that metaphor of the basket and you begin with that one strand, that's you at birth, and then you expand the baskets as you weave, you know, you're borrowing.
Yeah.
You really are borrowing other strands to create a bigger basket.
Yeah.
I think that borrowing, that's the reciprocity that I was talking about.
Yeah.
And that really what that means is you are actively seeking out meaningful connections.
Yeah.
And there's a wisdom to that. Right. So you have to be able to have interacted so well within yourself or not, maybe, I don't know, in order for you to understand the logic behind your connections. Right.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, you could live in a nice, lovely community where everyone gets along, but you still feel isolated.
Yeah.
And you could live in a city. I live in Hamburg, big city, same story. But you could also feel very connected to different people.
Yeah.
So what is that in between that connects us? Where is that wisdom?
Yeah, this is what you call the indigenous wisdom, how to feel this connection, this, how can I say it? This let me, if I try to explain it with this kind of energy and resonance you feel in the field around you.
Yeah.
And this has nothing to do with the functional construction we have designed. You know, as you mentioned, you can sit in this kind of forest and you don't sense this connection.
That's right. Yeah.
And you can sit in a flat, one room flat, alone in concrete.
Yeah.
And you feel it through the walls, right?
Absolutely. And you could even, I mean, you could be in a prison and you end up having, not that I'm recommending that we end up there,
but
you know, you could be in that level of isolation.
Yeah.
And still feel that interconnectedness. So I think it's inherent. It's a natural trait in us human beings to seek those connections. However, there is some kind of wisdom that is cultivated or maybe not cultivated. It could be that there's a wisdom that has to be activated in order for you to understand that your life is entangled with other lives. And there's no escaping that reality. Right.
Yeah.
So maybe you have to come into this state of acceptance. And then with that, that wisdom then gets activated.
Mm-hmm.
It is more natural for you to be in relationship with others. And it is unnatural to be isolated.
What comes to mind to overcome the fear or scariness of activating this wisdom, you know what I mean? Sometimes it seems to me that people are afraid to or overwhelmed by the experience of being vulnerable and truly connected. You know what I mean?
I think so. And I think that comes from the stories that we tell.
Yeah.
You know, there are there's so much fear mongering. If you, and this is no reflection on the media personalities or whatever. We have to tell stories, right? And we have to tell stories in whatever form. But are we telling the stories that connect us? Or are we telling stories that kind of disconnect us? If you're talking about disconnectedness, then of course we are all going to be afraid of connecting. But it also doesn't mean that we need to just go out there and connect for no reason at all, right?
Yeah.
So there is something there that should inspire us that should activate that wisdom of wanting to be connected with others. Yeah. And I think that's what's really interesting to me.
So for me, it seems that you made this deep experience of being connected. And so there comes up this curiosity and self-esteem to question the question, how, where comes this, where does this wisdom comes from?
Mm-hmm.
And how to reactivate it, right?
Mm-hmm.
This, maybe
mm-hmm.
this is your
mm-hmm.
question you have in the, your,
my hypothesis.
in your research following fellowship, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. I have resonance and I understand it. And now I'm thinking
mm-hmm.
how, what could be my next empathic question to deepen it, to make it more clear for listeners, is actually what I'm thinking at the moment.
Yeah. Go yeah. for it. Yeah.
Okay. I think in this situation, the best way for me is to feel in myself, going deeper and looking what's the resonance with me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When I'm listening to you and let it sink it in into me, it moves me because I can sense your motivation and your willingness to research and figure out how can we create this interconnection and creating mm-hmm. space or support people to experience this and
mm-hmm.
and experience this kind of beauty which is inside I sense.
And to flourish. And
yeah.
And there's, I might even have an answer to that or something. I maybe stumbled onto this idea of
mm-hmm.
what is it that we as human beings,
mm-hmm.
which is the state of being that provides the most optimal way of feeling like yeah. human being.
Yeah.
And I think that comes with contentment. And I think it's a weird word, contentment. When you think about it, you think, you know, contentment feels like satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really satisfaction. It's a state of being at peace within mm-hmm. you.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So being at peace within yourself, therefore you can be at peace within communities.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether
yeah.
you're in a community where you're isolated from others,
mm.
maybe the relationship you need to form isn't with other human beings. It could be relationships with animals at an animal shelter
yeah,
or whatever,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then that then begins to create other relationships. So when you're weaving that basket, if we go back to the basket metaphor, I don't think that there is a particular thread that you wouldn't take.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is you need to create wholeness in your basket is what you will take. So you don't go around choosing, you
yeah.
know, you take what you can.
Yeah.
So, and that's, I think that's what the relationships are. You take the relationship that is of value to you and that in which you can, together with that person or that thing,
yeah,
or that,
yeah, yeah.
you can create value somehow.
Yeah,
yeah.
Actually, I am doing my studies. I have heard a description, a word for this, what you have described. It's
mm-hmm.
called autopoiesis.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from biologically
mm-hmm.
that an organic system takes everything from his surrounding, what life needs to live, and you take it inside your, then you change it to the parts you need to become a basket, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then if there are parts you don't need, you just take it out and give
yes.
it away again. And then
yeah.
the cycle starts, you know.
That's right.
Well, something like this. And you mm-hmm. know, what moves me is that I sense that this topic or this wisdom of interconnection and
mm-hmm.
being that we are connected and what we need is to be connecting the dots. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think it's about awareness, but also trust that it's possible for us, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
What moves me is that I can sense that it's really a topic which is thriving you from your heart and motivating you from your heart. It's
mm-hmm.
very, very important and meaningful for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I love that you've mentioned that process, that biological process. It's a natural law, you know. Newton's third law of reciprocity was every action has an equal and opposite reaction, right?
Yeah.
And I think as human beings, we tend to focus, whenever you hear that, even I had to think about it myself, that idea of reciprocity, the interpretation, how we've interpreted it, again, based on stories that we've told of this connection, feels sometimes we interpret that reciprocity, or define it as an eye for an eye, you know, that if I hit you, you hit me back. That's a reaction.
Yeah.
That's not reciprocity, right?
Yeah.
But the kind of reciprocity I'm talking about is the giving and receiving.
Yeah.
To the extent that you lose the giver and the receiver, you can't, you're so entangled in the giving and receiving that there is no giver or receiver. You're all giving and receiving.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. If I handed you a present, right?
Yeah.
And it's boxed, so I have to give you, I have to do the act of physically giving it to you. You have to be able to receive it.
Exactly. Or
otherwise, the box would fall down if there's no hands waiting to carry it, right? And so there is that equal but opposite reaction. So the equal
giving, receiving,
but there is an opposite. So the giving and the receiving are opposite actions.
Yeah,
one action is the other one is a reaction. But you have to make that choice to be able to receive. That is the wisdom. So with relationships, you have to make the choice to be in relationship with that person. You have to make that very kind of millisecond choice of taking that strand, whatever it is. And that's why, you know, I think there's an English saying, something like, you know, it's not the gift that counts, it's the thought that counts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm weaving my basket, so I am my life is a basket.
Yeah.
I'm going to weave it with those threads that come to me.
Yeah.
Not the ones that I wish I had, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's where contentment comes in. You've got to be content with what's in your in your surrounding as you go expanding, right?
Yeah, got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And appreciating
every strand that comes your way, right? Rather than saying, well, I wish I had that other fancy strand, or I wish I had the longer one, or whatever.
Without judging the strands I got.
Because in the end, you're going to make something beautiful, and you are the creator.
Right? Exactly. You know, what you have described is actually what my intention is with the empathizer. You know, at the beginning, I was translating the empathy shankar in English to empathy giver. No, it's giving.
It's empathy giving. Yeah.
You know, and so that. It sounds fancier, empathizer, you know. So, but actually, it's about empathy giver, being an empathy giver. So
that's right.
It's only work when my guests, like you, are open to receive the empathy.
And absolutely.
If I go into presence, being with you, being trying to stepping in your foot, shoes to understand what's really moving you, and then opening empathy, then we have this reciprocity.
There you go, reciprocity.
Then something meaningful is evolved or emerging. We cannot actually, I would say, plan or describe before. And even if we experience this, we just sense it, you know, like this, we create, for me, it's creation of trust and reconnection, not the connection or reconnection. Between two human being, and the same as you said, you can create this kind of empathy and connection to animals, plants, nature, because it's life, you know. And
absolutely,
I got from you, this kind of awareness or knowing is the kind of wisdom you mean, right?
And you really hit it right. It's life. What you are doing, really, you're exchanging this kind of energy of life, and life exists beyond human beings. I think we've over hyper focused on what it means to be a human being, but what does it mean to be beyond human? What is my relationship with other communities of life? If we were to take ourselves as human beings as just one community of life in relationship with other communities of life, and this is very kind of indigenous thinking, you know, this interconnectedness, it's the idea that we don't occupy the entire planet. Right, as human beings, we occupy a certain amount of space, but we don't occupy all of the space on planet Earth. There are plants, there are trees, there are rivers, there are lakes, there are animals. All these are communities of life on planet Earth. Imagine if we were to expand our thinking and realize that all of these other communities of life on this planet are part of this, this bigger entity of all of life, right? Yeah. And you, as one person, has this possibility to expand and weave your basket to that extent that you are connected to the stars and whatever it is, right? The entire planet. So, and you can also be that small, right? So it's this idea of understanding your insignificance and also how significant you are as well, because you are in relationship with other life forms.
It feels wrong for me because I have the feeling I understand you. You know, what I'm curious about is you're talking about this wisdom, and you connected, and you're saying the indigenous wisdom. So when I'm listening to that, that for me it means that it's knowing wisdom. And at the same time, when you work on it, there is a reason. I don't want to use purpose because it's inflation.
I like reason. Actually, the word reason perhaps is,
I'm questioning has to be a reason for you that you are part of my basket now. working on this issue, you know, and that this issue is actually a research topic for you.
Absolutely. I mean, again, going back to what we said earlier, nothing is random, right? So these are choices. You had to make the choice to get in touch with me. I had to make this decision and the choice to say yes to this invitation. So there was some kind of trust there, basic trust. I think what we're touching on here is there is a basic trust. And the wisdom in this is that I don't know the reason for our being here, right? I don't know. And that is wisdom in itself, being able to accept the not knowing. And that's a space that we can occupy that can create this basic trust. Trust in the not knowing. We are very much trained in this contemporary modern world. And I make the distinction between contemporary modern world to sort of ancient or the indigenous world, right? Not so much Western and non-Western, because I think we're all kind of, I'm living in Hamburg, you're living in Dusseldorf, somebody in Nairobi, we're all living the same sort of modern experience, right? But somebody in a bush somewhere, you know, the Kalahari, is a different person. And so, and going back to that, you know, that person who's living in the Kalahari desert, maybe not everyone, has still the ability or the quality of relating to the not knowing in a positive way. Whereas for us here in this modern world, not knowing is very destabilizing, right?
This is scaring people.
It's a
now.
Very scary thing. And for good reasons. We have reason to be scared. If the German trains are not on time, I have reason to be.
I know. In Kenya, you have.
It's a domino effect. A domino effect. You know, if so if the S-Bahn is not going, then we're in trouble, right? But the reality is that none of that is real. None of that is real. And I think this is, for me, what I keep circling back to is that it's a made-up world. We've made up this world of convenience so that we can control the unknowable. And that's okay. Animals have their own way of living their own lives, and I don't know what that means, right? We're not animals. However, can we go beyond the organized society towards a more harmonious, living in harmony? Nature prefers harmony, right? And we're in disharmony with nature. We're so organized in our little bubble of human beings, but we're not organizing ourselves with the rest of nature. And therefore, we're in a state of chaos. And to me, I feel like that chaos that we're facing, whether you call it, you know, the climate crisis or the urgency of what's going on, and all the other crises that we're facing, whether it's the pandemics or war and all of that, there are so many things beyond our control. However, I think those are the things that are within our control. What's not in our control is what we have designed, a world of conveniences. for human being. It is important for me to come from this point A to point B. If, you know, my home is in the Netherlands, it's important for me to be on the train at this time and arrive at that time. I'm in control of that, but actually I'm not, because so many other variables are.
Yeah.
The climate itself is a variable. It is a condition that affects even the train system, right? And yet we are unable to interact with that which we don't know. And we are creating an isolation from our natural rhythm. And I think that is the real crisis that we're in. It's not so much the crisis of what's beyond us. It's a crisis that is in within us. And that comes down to me, that comes down to a crisis of storytelling. We have situations that we are facing as human beings, whether that is the changing climate, whether that is the polarization of different discourses, artificial intelligence, all of these other things that we've invented. But we have this quality of storytelling that has kept us alive. And that is where the crisis lies, is what is the kinds of stories that we're telling ourselves about who we are in relationship to other beings.
Like we could say everything what we at the moment experience on the globe is terrifying. The world will going down. And that different stories could be wow, what an exciting time. Everything is in change and we can be the creator of something new and different. And what a big amount of possibilities what we can do, right?
What are new relationships we can form? What are other ways that we can form better relationships so that we can trade better, so that we can understand each other's needs better, right? Who do we need to collaborate with? Those are the kinds of stories that create solutions to the problems that we can't control, but we can mitigate, right? So if you're talking about the climate, you know, I keep going on with this. If you're talking about the issue of the climate changing, how do we need to collaborate with those who have interacted with the natural land longest? So our indigenous peoples, how do we need, you know, how do governments, local government need to engage with that indigenous leader to understand the knowledge that they have about the land that they occupy so we can actually mitigate? So these are relationships based on basic trust. And in order to get to that basic trust, I think we need to realize the wisdom, that wisdom of relationship, that we are the logic of interconnectedness.
I have different aspects of the wisdom you're talking about. One is the wisdom of connection and the wisdom of knowledge, which is still there in relationship and also in people who are living over generations in parts of the world, because they have this wisdom knowledge of indigenous people about the area where they live. And also the wisdom, a part of wisdom is the knowing of we have not the control about our circumstances. And we thinking and have this dream of we have the control. I take this train and then I will be at the train station at that time. And then I arrive my destination at that time. But actually we haven't that in control. So if we have this wisdom that I have not the control about the timetable, actually. And there are so many circumstances who can interrupt this plan. And then being relaxed with the situation, if it is interrupted, this is the kind of wisdom you mean.
Absolutely. Then what do you get into? You get into a state of contentment.
Yes.
You get into a state of peacefulness.
Yes.
You get into a state of not accepting bad conditions, but accepting all conditions, all possibilities, because life is full of possibilities.
Yeah.
So then you accept that if this happens, the person sitting next to me, I am 100% sure that I would be okay being with this person next to me, right? You know, that sort of thing, rather than feeling isolated. I mean, think about it. We are isolated, but there's 8 billion of us. And the biggest pandemic that we're facing today, the biggest crisis is loneliness and sadness and isolation with 8 billion of us. I mean,
somehow weird, right?
It is very paradoxical. I mean, honestly, this should be the most exciting time. And we are so connected. Look at us. You know, we're having this conversation on Zoom. Somebody else is having a conversation somewhere else. And yet, there is a sense of aloneness, And I feel that that has a lot to do with kind of these ideas of that we have of who we are as isolated beings, rather than who we are as entanglements of each other. If you give in to that idea of my life is not disconnected to yours, we are very much in alignment with life as it is, then there is no loneliness, because there's no logic to that. You didn't come here alone, and you're not, you know.
For example, you know, what I'm appreciating at the moment is that I have been in Kenya in 2014. It's almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
But this gives me the opportunity to connect with you on this, on a specific level, because somehow I know the place you are from, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it easier to connect with you, because I, so there's the entanglement, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I wasn't aware 10 years ago about that would be somehow having a meaning or a contribution to the situation right now, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There you go. I mean, you taking that chance to go to a place like Kenya, which is not your home, and who knows, you know, for whatever reason, there was some logic to it. There was some wisdom to it. You decided to do it. And there you are. And that story has stayed with you to the extent that you have attracted a person on your call, on your podcast, who is also from Kenya, you know. So then there we have a shared connection.
Exactly.
But we don't even have to have that shared connection. It could be that you read a book or you saw a picture of something to Kenya, you know. So somewhere in our minds, we record these stories, these positive stories, right? And yet we also have this ability to keep negative stories.
Yeah.
So how can we kind of create this balance in our minds where it's not a good or bad story? It's all stories.
Yeah.
Therefore, my basket that I'm weaving, I can just keep weaving it with anything, whatever the resource is.
So I will try to wrap up and
go for it.
What I've heard is the wisdom. Actually, it's wisdom. And then it's heard it's wisdom of indigenous people. Because what you are describing, what wisdom is it's actually current knowledge humanity has, and especially indigenous people have collected it and they hold it in their communities, right?
They hold it, and I would even add there that what I'm hoping with this exploration, and as I continue to have these conversations with people, is that we start to imagine ourselves as all of us as indigenous to this planet. And we start respecting those who have held that wisdom for so long, and really borrowing from them, sharing with them, and understanding, so we don't forget how to activate that wisdom.
Oh, that makes up a new point for me. I would like to share an experience I had, you know. I was in Portugal for an international meeting to moderate these people. It was about, and then there was a negotiation between industry, economic, and indigenous people for about, and there was a person from Canada. He was an indigenous representative. And he said to me, you cannot moderate this negotiation because you have no indigenous people in Germany.
Wow.
And I said, my first response, no, that's not right. Well, you know? But I couldn't explain the indigenous people in Germany the way his understanding of indigenous people is, you know, because I guess it was a lot of this conqueror and occupied parties, you know, engineers are occupied people and not indigenous people are conquerors.
That's right.
You know, something like that. But when you said, the awareness of we are all indigenous people and we are somehow connected to me, then I said, okay, I would say then I'm an indigenous guy from the rural area in North Rhine-Westphalia, and I know the space there, you know?
And well, and there is that. So we could, we don't want to diminish the experience of indigenous people, that occupation, that being occupied or being removed, or even, you know, horrible genocides were committed to indigenous people. I understand that. And of course, we understand it as humanity and what that means. We need to fix that problem. We need to be able to tell a better story. We need to have some kind of reparations and some kind of restorative or regenerative event, regenerative means of policies that can help reduce the pain and also provide opportunities for Indigenous people to continue to live in the way that they want to live.
Yeah.
And that's 100% what we should be doing. However, at the same time, I think it's important for us to have this dialogue with them. I think that having you as a person moderating a conversation with Indigenous people already provides that bridge between the modern and the Indigenous.
Yeah.
And therefore then an opportunity for you to become allies and to collaborate and to have this solidarity as human beings.
Yeah.
And then you start to consider all of us, we start to consider ourselves, all of us, as one entity, one community of human beings Indigenous to this planet.
Yeah.
Right?
Got it.
As much as animals are Indigenous to planet Earth, right?
Yeah, so
you start to see that. I think when we start to do this separation of identity,
yes,
I'm Indigenous, I'm not Indigenous, I'm
then
German,
we have to fight.
I'm Kenyan, then we're back to the same, and then we're back to the conquering and the conquered.
Yeah, exactly. And
and
if we are able to overcome this, then the wisdom starts, actually, right? This
is through dialogue, through storytelling, and through stories that bring common humanity. We speak about this idea of Ubuntu. Ubuntu is an idea of humanity, right?
Yeah.
So if you have these kinds of stories, if you're moderating a platform, if that is the opportunity that you have and you have that space, you're occupying that space, then it's also a responsibility to you to create that means to connection, that means to bringing about that common humanity.
Yeah.
I think that's a better way, a better use of that platform than someone saying, you know, come off this platform, let's bring an Indigenous person to have this dialogue. Then we're just talking to ourselves, right?
Yeah.
But if you're placed in that moment, for whatever reason, which is not random, as we've identified, then it's an opportunity for you to say, oh, wow, look at us. We're meeting for the first time. Let's create an opportunity to look at each other as human beings. And there you have something extraordinary that could happen. Yeah.
And then I came around with empathy and let's understand each other, right?
There you go. It is a moment to, it calls for empathy.
Yeah.
But empathy is not enough when it is, when you're not able to act on it. So you need to move beyond that empathy, move into compassion, move into respect, solidarity and dignity, and then equality, right? So you are at equal, right? Yeah. Then whatever strand was the strongest, doesn't mean anything because it can be held, or the weakest can be held by the strongest, and therefore we're all creating, weaving the same basket.
Well, that was a deep dive, I would say.
Well, it's on you, Sebastian. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So then finally I would like ask you, is there something at least you would like to share with the listeners? And I'm curious about how was it for you to be here?
Oh, thank you so much. Well, firstly, I just enjoyed myself so much talking to you. You're such an easy interviewer. So that makes it very easy to talk and be open. And I really mean that. Something I'd like to share with the listeners. I keep going back to this idea of who do we need to become in order to leave a good footprint for the next generation of children. I have a very soft spot for children. And I think that we're mirroring the worst of ourselves at the moment. And we have an opportunity to mirror the best of ourselves. So this is sort of a call to be good leaders, but not just good leaders, but to really rise up to the occasion of who we are and the possibility of who we can become, rather than reverting back to fighting over the smallest representation of ourselves. Let's compete around our potential. Like, who can we become? Like, what are the possibilities of being really awesome human beings that children can look at us and think, wow, I'm so glad I live on this planet with these adults. You know, so it's really a call to become adults. Like, we need to grow up. You know? We need to grow up and become wise about our growth. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much, Vakani, to being my guest here today. And thank you for your openness and trust.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
That was episode 62, Wisdom of Life. If you like the podcast, please follow and rate it and share it with your friends on social media. And if you would like to be heard or give feedback, please write to me at podcast@empathieschenker.de. See you in 2 weeks.